Save big money on your kitchen project at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free design estimates today. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big money at Menards.
Good evening. Welcome to another higher education podcast. Getting a bit confusing now because it's Cycle Vertical Podcast, and this is the higher education bit. So I'm Andy Kirkpatrick. I'm your host. This is the sort of weekly short podcast where I'm going to talk less shy and talk a few like climbing related things. It's Sunday night. I'm sat here with my tea. I'm going to do like a Scott Adams little, you know, drink my tea. Sunday night in the Arab world. I didn't know this. I was surprised when I got here. But in the Arab world, you have Friday and Saturday off, and you go to work on a Sunday. Someone said in Israel you have Friday off and Sunday off or something. But so it's kind of weird. So you have to get kind of used to Thursday being your day off. And Friday being your day off. So that's why if there was ever any like trouble, that's why people always have a lot of trouble on a Friday. Because that's everyone's got the day off. It's not necessarily everyone goes to Friday prayers and they all get riled up by somebody and start burning everything down. It's mainly that it's most people work here, so everyone seems to have a job. If you've got a job, you haven't got time to go and have riots and things. You have to have some time in lieu or something. So anyway, so. So I've got a few questions this evening. I've had quite a few questions, actually. I keep losing them all. I need to put them all in a folder somewhere. So I did have a very good question about lanyards. I know I told you in my last podcast I was going to talk about lanyards, but I think I'm just going to keep it, because it's a bit of a hot topic. You know, I know people are like just downloading this because they're like, oh, I gotta listen to that thing about lanyards. I know most people think I'm talking about the kind of lanyards that like snowboarders have, you know, where they just like anywhere, but no, it's actually climbing lanyards, so it'll disappoint some people. But I think I'm just going to hang on to it for a while because I can't find the question. But an interesting question this week was someone asked me about what curry, my curry recipe, which is kind of interesting because curry is a. I think, is it not, like in Britain, for any foreign listeners in the UK, not only is the number one boy's name Mohammed, but also the number one food is chicken tikka masala, which is actually not Asian at all. It's basically what Asian people made for ignorant English people. And I think it was just tomato sauce and mayonnaise mixed together and then put on some chicken. And then British people loved it. Someone told me that margarine's getting banned in America, which is good to know. It's horrible stuff. So all those kind of are they trans fats anyway? All those kind of things. But salad cream is kind of like a poor person's mayonnaise. I don't think I had mayonnaise until I was probably in my 20s, and I didn't have garlic until I was in my 20s either. And all sorts of exotic stuff like that. I still have a lot of problem with fruit, actually, fruit and vegetables. I don't know what a lot of fruit and vegetables look like. My daughter was doing a thing at school and they said, oh, you have to bring in a melon or something. I went to Tesco's. I didn't know what a melon looked like. Isn't that terrible? Anyway, so I don't like melon anyway. I don't know what it tastes like, but I don't think I like it. I do like beetroot, though. So, but that's not a vegetable. Oh, is it? Anyway, it's red, isn't it? So it doesn't matter what it is. So, so the curry recipe. I'm not going to tell you my curry recipe. I might actually do a podcast where I actually cook a curry. You'd be like, cooking with Andy. That's a, you know, kind of cooking Wednesday. Anyway, I was reading two things on a nautical theme. I was reading Chris Bonington's book about going sailing to Greenland and climbing. Yeah, I think it was in the Lemon Mountains. If you get hold of it, like it's not like the best book in the world, but it's got no shagging in it or anything. It's just basically Chris Bonington, I think it's Che Blythe and some people, they sail to Greenland. It's like a book where nothing really happens, but it's kind of good, you know. It's just like a nice adventure book, and stuff from Scotland and the climb there and stuff. So it's kind of a nice book to read. But I remember reading the book, he was saying about how he made his famous curry or something on board, and I was like, oh God, I bet Chris Bonington can make a really good curry. And like all those old guys, you know, you just can tell they can make like a really amazing curry. And So I think curry is a really good food, I reckon, because you can just like, it's basically like what poor people eat, which means that if you're poor, you can eat as well. So basically, with curry, you can just get a few ingredients, like proper ingredients. If you want to make a proper curry, you need like proper curry ingredients, no like curry powder and all that kind of stuff. You get some proper ingredients and they don't cost that much money, and they last like for ages, and you can just bang in a lot of vegetables and tomatoes and all that kind of stuff, and you can get like a huge bag of rice. I think when we went around Africa, Africa for like 4 or 5 months or something, we basically like lived on like rice and lentils and stuff, and it took me a long time to learn how to make a curry. And to do like dal and all this kind of stuff, and but I think they're really, really good. So one good thing about, I saw this guy, I can't remember his name now. He's a really famous old geezer, Swedish guy who was dyslexic, and he got thrown out of the army, and then he built a boat in his bedroom, and then he sailed around the world in it. So he didn't have a very big bedroom, and they had to take like the wall off the side of his house to get his boat out. So the boat is. Anyway, but now with this guy's like in his 80s and he's sailing around the world again in this tiny little boat, and the only food he has is he has muesli. Basically, he basically makes his own muesli, and that's all he eats every day is muesli. And he has one tin of sardines, and he said that for like 365 days he's just got muesli and sardines. And he said that basically in the West we're so bored in our lives that we try and fill it full of all this variety of food, where, like, you know, like most places in the world, people tend to eat the same food every day. Like in Africa, people eat ugali, and in South America, people eat it's horrible stuff they eat. Anyway, I bet. Anyway, it's horrible. Anyway, so you know, people are basically eating the same food every single day of their lives, apart from when they have a celebration or a feast or something. Where in the West, like, we just have a feast every single day, and we're obsessed about food, and everything surrounds, you know, most people's lives are all about, you know, if someone says you want to go to Paris, the first thing they'll think about is like, what food is they or something. Maybe that's just me. I have this thing, maybe I'll talk about it some other time, like the way I try and think about my life is have this, that you're like a line of code. Like I don't like, I'm really wary of not codifying everything. Like when someone says, oh, I'm 100% better, or when someone says they've got like clinical depression. I don't like all these kind of codifying like human things. But I had this idea of like thinking of yourself as code, like just your... And how you can start removing lines of code inside yourself in your programming. So one of those lines of, you know, food is a big bunch of code in people how they feel about food and what food represents. So I had this idea of just like trying to just kind of live on one kind of food. So basically, I kind of live on coffee, and curry, basically. But I don't smell of curry, so that's kind of good, really. So I probably do smell of curry, actually. So anyway, I don't care. So I actually live in an area where goodness, that sounds like really racist then. I actually live in an area where most people do smell of curry, so I probably can't tell the difference. So casual racism. That's what I like. That's my favourite kind of racism, actually. Someone said the other day that I said as a joke I was going to write a new magazine that's going to be like edgy, sort of a dark web climbing magazine. And I'll tell you the time why I was going to do this magazine, and I said I was going to call it Blackface. Now I thought Blackface, we could all start taking the piss out of Blackface now, because it's like such a ridiculous. It's a ridiculous thing to begin with, and also now it's just become like ridiculous, and even more ridiculous after Justin Trudeau and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, but someone accused me of casual racism by using the word blackface. So I'm getting off the anyway. Back to the point. It's supposed to be quite short, and it's just about climbing. So yeah, so the curry recipe. I've got a few curry recipes. I make enough curry for two people for about a week or about 10 days, which is like quite a lot of curry. And I also like cook all the rice and everything, and then I just like put it into the freezer so you don't have to think about it. Is that old, you know, like your Facebook man, you know, he always wears a hoodie, and Steve Jobs always had the same clothes, and Albert Einstein and that bloke out of X Factor. So it's that kind of idea. You don't have to think about what food you're going to eat. It's just there. So, but I'll put a good recipe in the show notes. You know, I don't really have show notes, but I'll stick this curry a link to. There's a really good website that's got loads of really good curry recipes, and this is quite a good one. And when I make it, I just like shoving loads of extra vegetables to try and fill it out. There is chicken in there. Someone asked me if I'd seen that thing, that program, Game Changer, on Netflix, which is all about being a vegan. So I'm a big fan of this Starting Strength podcast, which is by Mark Ripitor, who's this like old, like grumpy, like American guy, but he's actually really. If you want to know about, like, if you want to get some idea about strength training, which I think is like one of the most important things for all climbers should do, is actually do some proper strength training, like regularly, like a period of every year, because it's like probably the best thing to stop you getting like really decrepit. Like I'm sort of 48, and I'm not decrepit at all, apart from I've got like a dodgy Achilles tendon from playing football, like for the first time in about 40 years. So that's my injury. But Mark Ripitor has got a very good book. Mark Ripitor, maybe I'll put that in the thing as well. He's got a very good book. You do like, you know, for strength training. You've just got like five exercises, and you do them like, you're supposed to do them three times a week, but you can like vary around it. Anyway, so, but someone asked me if I'd seen this game-changing podcast, big game-changing film on Netflix, and Mark Ripitor calls vegans vegans. I know there's probably going to be some vegans out there who are going to get really, I'm going to like lose like probably 50% of the people listening to this, because like vegans, like he calls them vegans because it annoys vegans, but he says like, well, there's no such word as vegan, but there is a word for vegans, so he calls them vegans to annoy people. And I always find it weird when you see people, like, you know, when you do a park run, you know, I've never done a park run. Park runs are really good. And you do park run, and there's always someone with a t-shirt saying like vegan runner. And I always thought it'd be fun to have like prematurely ejaculating runner or something, you know, something like that. Rectum prolapse runner or something. Or not vegan runner. I was thinking that would be quite a good t-shirt to do. My son's been... he's trying to start a business with my son, which is like making stupid t-shirts, just so I can like instill in him the futility of trying to make a living. So you can have these big dreams and they can all be destroyed, and then that's a good like foundation of like the rest of your life. So we couldn't with like with ideas, and one of mine was just like fuck Everest on it, which I thought was kind of cool, kind of witty. Anyway, oh yeah, so the question, someone asked me like what I thought of this this program out plant-based diet, and I would just everything in moderation, but moderation I'm always kind of wary of like trendy stuff or like cults and things. I'm always kind of suspicious really. Like I think I said in a podcast, like I realized I was quite bigoted because I really didn't like religious people, and you know, like if you come from the UK, like you're basically very narrow-minded, you know. And because you think you're open-minded because you hate all religions and you're an atheist, but actually you're actually quite narrow-minded, because when the more religious people you meet, the more you realise that when you're in the minority and everybody else is religious, you start wondering if they know something you don't know, which is not really true either. But anyway, so I'm always aware of cult. I'm always kind of wary of cults. But all the vegans I've ever met, they basically just live on chips. They just eat chips the whole time. I drink too much fruit juice. I don't believe in fruit. I come from Hull. You know, I think it's something to do with the docks. I think my great granddad was a docker. That's not a pair of boots. Maybe that's something to do with like if your great great granddad was a docker, then you probably put off fruit, lifting fruit off ships and things. So maybe that's why I wouldn't be a vegan. I was a vegetarian for a while, but that was because, you know, you're going out with someone who's a vegetarian, you have to pretend, don't you? In these days, you have to pretend to be vegetarian, you have to pretend not to be casually racist, and it's the same. It's just the same sort of thing. So, yeah, that was my response, basically, to everything in moderation, even a bit of chicken. So covered curry, we've covered that. So we have a question here. I'll read it out, so then the person who's listening to it can say, oh, that's me. Oh, my God. Why don't you get fucked? Oh, no, that's annoying. Hi, mate. I was wondering when you do your higher education podcast, whether you could shut the fuck up, whether you could shed some light on rope and sling condition. Now, this is my kind of question. At the moment, me and my mate change our ropes every year and we go half each on them. Oh, that's nice. We always say, in the grand scheme of things, £100 each for a year for the amount of climbing, mostly falling, we do, is worth it not to die. But how often do you really need to change a rope? They always get so much abuse. We're both around 80 kilos, bloody lightweights. We tread on them in the dirt and get them wet, get them stuck on the rock and put them through all kinds of abuse. Would you change your rope after a certain amount of falls? Also, when it comes to slings, they worry me most. When they get dirty and wet, I normally change them and I have a fear of them rotting and becoming weak. Is it irrational, or am I just being a tart? That last bit, I do apologise for the use of the word tart, because that's probably offending somebody, probably a woman. And oh, God. So a man can be a tart anyway, can he? No, that's probably offensive as well to call a man a tart. Anyway, irrationally, I won't read his name out, Baz from Bristol. Yeah, ropes are weird. Like, I'm lucky in that I seem to have sort of managed to wangle quite a lot of ropes. But I've had ropes, and I've given them to a friend of mine, Paul Tattersall, who lives up in Gairlock, up in Torridon. And when I give him my ropes, they were pretty knackered. Otherwise, I wouldn't give him a rope for free. So I'd probably had it for a year. And then I would go up to Scotland, you know, like 5 years later, and he'd still be climbing on the same ropes I'd given him. And he would be like, you know, out of all the people I know of climb with, he probably falls off the most and like would really, really, really abuse them. So what? So for me personally, I tend to always wear out my ropes. Ropes probably last me about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and they generally always get like sheath damage from like rocks hitting them, crampons, just basically like some ropes. Like when I've climbed on El Capitan, if you're doing like a big wall, a rope would probably last you like a lead rope, not a static rope. A lead rope will probably last you like three or four walls, and then they'll start getting kind of a bit like starting to get like ratty, and they've got like, you know, the sheath damage on them and stuff. But the sheath is like 20% of the strength anyway. So, but once the sheath gets so damaged that, like, if it can break when you're abseiling on it, which is like it's unnerving when the sheath breaks, because you kind of slide down the core of the rope on the sheath for a little bit, it all bunches up. But once it starts looking like the sheath is going to start going, then that's generally when I always like replace my ropes. But I expect the ropes are probably like still in really, really good condition. Like, I don't really, the last ropes I had were like, I think they were like seven, you know, they were like sub 8mm ropes. I mean, I had two of them, and I probably climbed on them probably on average like every other day for you know, like a year and a half or something. Like, went all over the place with them, and they got like, you know, wet and dry, and use them in the winter and the, you know, in the, you know, sandstone, granite, all this kind of stuff, and they were still in like good condition. So I guess that old thing about not standing on your ropes is still good advice. Like, if you have some kind of rope bag, rope mat that you can, or a piece of tarpaulin that you can put the rope on when you're climbing, like it's really basic stuff. But like, you go climbing, a lot of people don't actually do it. They just put the rope on the ground. Like, stopping the dirt getting into your rope is a really good idea. If you're doing like a lot of sort of sport climbing, like, and top roping and stuff, like in the UK we don't have that. We don't have like tons and tons of that kind of stuff. So, but if you're doing that, then definitely stay away from like skinny, really skinny ropes, because they're really for someone who's like Chris Sharma or really good climber who wants like a sub 9mm rope for his super hard route. But for a normal climber, you know, you want like a 10.5 or even like an 11mm rope. You'll get really strong if you have to sport climb on a big thick 11mm rope. But you want, you know, like, you want a rope that's like a really, really tough, like a working, you know, like a working rope. I think the old classics were things like a Beale Edlinger or a Mammut Galaxy, 10mm Galaxy, again, was like a classic. Like, that used to be like the skinny sport climbing rope, but now it's just like a big granddad sort of rope. You know, so, but even then, like a really thick, a really big chunky rope, you can damage it as quickly as a really skinny rope if you set up a belay badly. And it's like, I think we did a route in Squamish, is it Angel's Crest, one of these, like, really, it's like one of the best, probably one of the best routes I've ever done in my life, probably. It's like a 10C or something. And there was one bit on it where, for some reason, when I was seconding, I just couldn't quite get it, and it wasn't like the crux pitch, but for some reason I just kept like falling off this one little bit, and because it was literally off the B layer, and every time I fell, because I was falling near the B layer, there was so much rope stretch, there was quite a lot of rope stretched out, and the rope was just running over like a piece of rock just near, close to me, and it really, like, it didn't destroy the rope, but the rope, you know, got some significant like wear and tear on it, just like literally, and they were like almost like brand new. So that's, you know, being an idiot, basically, not being able to do it. So yes, it's probably, but actually falling on the ropes, like, if you're going to be doing like loads and loads and loads and loads of falling, if you're going to be a real sort of sport climber, then not only get like a big thick rope, but also get like a longer rope, because all the main thing is probably going to be like a rope's not going to snap when you're falling on it. Basically, like it's going to snap because it's got some sort of contamination, like battery acid on it or something, or if it's like white, you know, like it's been like in a shop window with like halogen bulbs, you know, heating it up or something. But just climbing a solid rope is not going to snap if you're falling on it. So, but it is going to wear out. Like if you with a sport rope, you're always falling with the bolt like very, very close to you. So you're always wearing that part of the rope all the time. So buying a longer rope, like an 80 meter rope or a 70 meter rope, allows you to like cut off the rope as it's getting more and more worn out. And it's a pain carrying like a longer rope, but it is really handy having a longer rope. Like I'm not like Mr. Sport Climbing Man, but I think for most people who are trad climbing, they're not taking like huge falls all the time. And in fact, like a really, really big fall is probably better for the rope than all those like short falls, especially like short falls like close to the B-legs. That's where if you take like a 120 meter fall, you know, you're doing a 60 meter pitch with no gear, and you're just at the B layer, and you fall off, and you take like a 120 meter fall. If your brain doesn't explode, then probably the damage to the rope is probably less than being like, you know, 1 meter from the B layer and taking like a factor two like onto a piece of gear onto the B layer, because you're putting all that sort of stretch into a very small piece of rope, really. So I'm not recommending that you take like 120 meter falls. I do know people have taken falls like that, but so slings are fairly cheap. Like I would say if the sling's made out of nylon and it looks anything, you know, if it looks like a vintage sling, and it's got vintage kind of colours, and I just get rid of it. And you do see people with like really, really old slings, old Wild Country slings that they've probably not been making for at least 20 years now. And it's like in the past, you had these like Troll Super Tube tape, and Troll Super Tube, I think it was like 28 millimetres. And it was basically like the strop you'd get like for a helicopter would lift a tank up with or something. So those kind of slings, you know, the classic thing is like, oh, we had this old sling, we tested it, it was as strong as a new sling. And that's kind of that's true. But with as you're getting closer and closer to now, the slings were actually getting thinner and thinner. So you're going, so the nylon slings, you know, went down to, you know, like 16 millimeter slings and things like nylon slings. And the Dyneema ones have gone down from like 16 mil, and now you've got like 8 millimeter slings and things. So the slings themselves are like, with all this stuff, like basically before people could really test everything, they were always building them to a standard. Like they didn't know what the standard was, so they made them like massively strong, like 10 times stronger than they had to be. When now they know what the standard is, and so now they can actually design them to the standard. So like an 8 millimeter sling, like an 8 millimeter Dyneema sling, like in a test rig clipped to two steel carabiners, is probably, you know, still like super, super strong. But if that sling's like super, super worn, and it's actually around a sharp piece of granite, like a thread or a spike or something, and you fall on it, then, you know, like who knows what's going to happen. So I would probably just, like, personally, I tend to never throw away slings because I tend to find a lot of slings, and I just generally inspect the sling, and I look at the, like, all slings should have some colour in them so you can tell how old they are, because Dyneema is white, it's quite hard to tell. But you want to check the sling, see how old it is by seeing if the colour's still nice and bright, see if it has any melt marks on it, see how, you know, if it looks fine, then generally, personally, I often end up using them. Mainly because I end up taking them with me, because I don't like trash on the crag. So I'll take it with me, and then I'll forget which was which, and I'll just end up using it. And so far, none of them have broken. And so I, I, I but then I generally lose slings. So there's any of abseiling off slings anyway, or you know, they just get kind of get lost or get trashed or get cut up or whatever. So I don't remember ever like actually throwing any slings away. They just kind of just disintegrate into the mountains really. So but just like I think with all your gear, like I remember climbing once and we're doing a route. When we got to the top, I made like a lanyard. Oh yeah, lanyard. See, I used the word lanyard there. Those lanyard people are really excited. I made like a lanyard out of the 120 centimeter sling. Then I abseiled like all the way down this route. And then when I got down to the ground, I realized I actually stood in the sling with a cramp on at one point, did like an aid move, and it actually sliced like through the sling. So it was like, you know, like it was 50% cut through. So I'd been like hanging on this sling all the way down. So if it just broke, and you know, would have probably fallen to my death. So, like inspecting all your gear is always a good idea. You want to inspect your carabiners for little nicks in the gates, which are going to destroy your rope, and just all that. You know, just go through all your gear every now and again. And just kind of look after it. Like give all your slings a wash if they've got salt on them and stuff, just so they don't go stiff and horrible. But I suspect if someone's asking the question how long to keep a piece of gear, then that kind of person doesn't really need to worry, because if you're thinking about it, then you're going to replace it probably when it's still got like 75% of its life still in it. It's more the people who are still using like a rigid friend from like 1979 that still has the same webbing like quick draw thing attached to it. So, you know, those things do like, you know, the cam itself might not break, but the webbing is you know, well past its sell by date. So that was time to go to bed. My tea has gone a bit cold. I've not been drinking it. I've been talking too much. So see, that's the kind of sacrifices I make, you know, for my audience. So I shall post this on for Tuesday. You'll know already because you'll be listening to it. And if you're not listening to it, then don't worry about it. And I'll put some links in the bottom for this curry recipe and Mark and Starting Strength as well and his book. I'll probably put like a sneaky Amazon link in there. So if you buy his book, buy it through this Amazon link. Then I'll just be getting like millions and millions of pennies. Well, not millions, like probably like 10p. Dastardly. I know it's Amazon, but you know, we have to do these things. So anyway, so thank you for listening, and I shall talk to you on Thursday or Friday. Someday. Where's... I'm
sorry. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.